and welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, on Smart Speaker, of course, on our podcast. I'm Nady Packham, and we are looking at videos of comedy own goals in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Well then, we would love to be telling you tales of a scintillating performance filled with amazing goals, but we'd have to be looking at a different game to the one at Burnley last Saturday. It was, I guess, another point to the total, but we are now in danger of letting our season peter out. One bright spark to come out of the game, though, is that 19-year-old Marco Marni is the latest graduate from the academy to make his league debut. It's a weekend off for the team this week as Chelsea are in the FA Cup semi-final, so our fixture next up will be either Wednesday or Thursday against champions and league leaders Manchester City. If you are, however, after a football fix before then, the Albion women's team is in action at the Amex on Friday with Everton the visitors. Joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back a man who, when confronted with a beer list of over 300 beers, will endeavour to try them all. It's from the Brighton Rock Pod. It's Russell Guyver.
Hello, boys. How you doing?
300's pushing it, isn't it? I mean, like, you know, maybe sort of peak out of 50, but 300, that's just plain greedy.
Yeah, I'd stop when I get into three figures, just about. Yeah.
Yeah, those, you like those. You like going to those pubs that do the flights for free, don't you?
And
you
can have... yes, I do.
Can I just point out to our listener that actually this show is more than about people getting drunk. I'm not sure how much more, but having said that, if you listen to one of Russell's podcasts, then maybe you know this this destruction of character might actually be true. Russ, welcome back to the show, mate. How are you?
Thank you. Yeah, I was going to say, speak for yourselves, boys. We get rather drunk on our pods. Yes, I'm fine. Thank you very much. I'm very pleased to be back with you guys. And as I said to Aidy before, I'm not wearing my usual EasyJet polo shirt. It's just an ordinary orange polo shirt, but you keep calling it the EasyJet polo shirt.
You are wearing an Art of Football shirt, who are good friends of the show here. And we very much appreciate their work.
So am I, but you just can't see it under my jumper. And more to the point, you can't see it on the radio.
Yeah. But I mean, Russ, that particular shirt you've got is the Art of Football European Tour t-shirt. And how has it been for you? I mean, obviously, it's been... I think to many people, I think I said this on the show a week or so ago or last week, that when the fixtures came out, we were like, yeah, but when are the European fixtures out? It's kind of been quite a lot of focus on that, and since we've been knocked out, it's kind of like a bit of a damp squib, and the whole season's been kind of derailed, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, it's been such an unprecedented and historic season, isn't it, getting into Europe for the very first time. And normally you would be looking for the Palace fixture and maybe Liverpool-Man U, whatever, or you know, whoever the big teams are in whichever division we're in at the time. But with this season, yeah, it's been all about Europe, looking at when those fixtures out, can we go, can we afford it with the inflated prices by the minute, that kind of thing. And that's all that anybody, particularly us that have been there for so many years, waiting for a moment like this to come, for it to finally come. It's been fantastic, hasn't it?
Did you manage to get to all four games, Russ?
No, I only got to two of the four, and that was for budgetary reasons. I would have loved to have done them all, but I'd be divorced now, so I had to balance it.
Which two did you do? Actually, I know which two you did, because the same two that I did. So,
yes, Amsterdam and Rome, yeah.
Us getting knocked out by Rome, I think, actually saved so many people's bank accounts and pleased so many bank managers, because whoever... Well, I think it was... Did Roma get... who did Roma get in the next... Who have they got at the moment?
Milan.
It is Milan, yeah. So, Milan, yeah. Well, to be fair, so many people flew to Milan last time that you think, well, and you just, I'm like, yeah, exactly. You've tried to, it's might be fly to Dublin just in case.
Yes, you know. Well, I know someone that did that. But I was hoping we would get through, because then I could have flown to Rome to go to Milan to do the opposite way around.
Now, actually, Russ, I do happen to know that you were seen in Amsterdam. At the Amsterdam Comedy Cafe.
I was, yes. By you, yes. It was a great event, I have to say. Hats off to you, AD. For anyone that wasn't there and wants to know, was it really good? Because they said it was good. It was. It was great fun. I did have a pig of a hangover for some bizarre reason.
No.
But aside from that, I enjoyed it. Yeah, I know. Who knew? But I enjoyed it. It was great.
It was a delicate start to the day for you.
It's good fun. Yeah, it was great. And you were, when you called, were you called Brighton Roar or something?
Really?
They got it wrong, the name, could you believe?
But that was Dave got it wrong, but he was soon corrected and he did get it right eventually. But
Russ, if we rewind pretty much a year, and we're looking at the last sort of 8-10 games running, we've probably just about been knocked out of the FA Cups in the FA Cup semi final. And we've got a run in and we're kind of looking excited. Can you sort of give us a flavour as how you felt that we were talking about, hey, we could get into Europe, and B, making it into Europe? I mean, can you give us a flavour of how you felt at that time?
Yeah, I mean, just full of exhilaration, excitement for the very possibility of it alone. You know, the fact we're even in the conversation was just fantastic. I think we had there was a couple of games where you got the results and you knew we were on the way. It was a matter of confirming it. And I think it was, what was it, Southampton, wasn't it, that more or less did it?
Mm. It was the Southampton game that confirmed that we were going to be in Europe, but we didn't quite know what competition it was going to be at that point. Right. But we were definitely going to be in Europe after that competition.
Yeah, I mean, it was sort of slightly surreal, wasn't it? Again, for gentlemen of a certain age who have been supporting the Albion like us, you know, we've been through the mill, we've been through so many different divisions, so many different scenarios. And to have this very new one of we could qualify for Europe just seemed slightly surreal to me. I couldn't quite believe. I was thinking, you know, it took it quite nonchalantly in one way. But then when you take a step back for a minute, you think, bloody hell, really? Are we actually going to maybe get into that, into one of those tournaments? And I didn't really care which one it would be. But obviously, the fact we got into Europa, as it turned out, was all the better. I'm so much happier that we got into that tournament, because I think that just gave us a bit more kudos, didn't it?
Yeah. Now, Russ, I mean, I said it that in the intro that we're in danger of letting the season peter out a bit. Now, we are still with a chance of qualifying for Europe. It's becoming, I mean, not beating Burnley, which we'll come to very shortly, but and not picking up, dropping quite a lot of points over the last few weeks or so, it's making that task all more different. But would it be the end of the world if we didn't qualify for Europe, or are we just hungry for more? Really, I mean, I want more, but
well, I think I was very hungry for it. I really wanted us to get it back to back, to build on what we've done, even if it was in the conference rather than the Europa. I wanted us to have more of the action, not just the greed factor, although that's part of it, but mainly the fact that I wanted us to build our reputation more and to entice, hopefully, Roberto De Zerbi to stay that a little bit more. You know, there's more unfinished business and all that stuff. But to be honest with you, I've become quite philosophical the last 2 or 3 weeks. The amount of injuries we've had, the schedule we've had to deal with for the first time ever, which others have had to do before us, it just feels as if it's not that much of a problem. If we miss out this year, if we can go again, hopefully with Roberto still in charge, and qualify next season, I'd be completely happy with that. What I do want, though, is us to finish in the top half. We've been there all season. I'd love us to stay ahead, back ahead of Chelsea and preferably West Ham as well. But I'm not too worried about Europe, because I think the way we're going, the way we're run, even with a different manager, coach, I think we'll get there again. So I'm quite philosophical about it now, although I really want us to stay top half, because there is a psychological thing with that, isn't there?
I mean, I have got this feeling. I mean, this summer is going to be, it's going to be a really weird summer anyway, because of the FFP stuff that's going on. And it's very much going to be a buyer's market. And if we could qualify for a European competition, it would possibly make us more of a destination club than it would do if we're not in Europe. But I think
you're forgetting those two words, AD.
What?
Brighton tax.
Well, I don't think such a thing exists, because, like, Barber and Bloom are such hard negotiators. They
Well, yes.
If it's not at the price we want, we won't do the deal.
Absolutely. And then who do we miss out on? I mean, don't get me wrong. I fully agree with you that they are excellent negotiators. And yeah, I mean, if X club wants 15 million and we're only prepared to go 10, then 10 it is.
I mean, and obviously, and then you've got the contract terms as well, which is why Kudos didn't come here, and he's gone to West Ham. He's been exceptional for them, although apparently not off the field, not so exceptional, I understand, which may be another reason he might not possibly have fitted in here. But
well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, but your point about is it such a horrendous thing? Now, obviously, the scary thing that people are not sure about, because I think there's one journalists and citizen journalists, but actually even unhelpful journalists do put stuff out there where they hear what De Zerbi is saying about any given subject, any given topic related around the Albion, around football, around the season, around whatever it might be. And because his English isn't sort of, 100%, it's not on point, certain things will get lost in translation, where they talks about players' behaviour. What he does means is not necessarily behaviour, could be talking about attitude or culture. I mean, that's the way sometimes you just have to sort of stop and think a little bit. So this whole thing of De Zerbi has the hump, De Zerbi has this, it's, as I said before, it's the universal cry of any manager down the years, I want the club to match my ambitions. So we get that. So we've got to take all that with a certain pinch of salt. I think he has sort of calmed down a little bit and realised what it is. So you're going to have these two forces that are going to be pushing against each other. You've got Barbara and Bloom on one side, you've got De Zerbi on the other. Together, I don't think they'll be destructive. We already know that they can actually be so creative and that we have the potential to go way further. And if that means we take a step back, listen, we haven't slammed ourselves into reverse. We might have taken our foot off the gas a little. But if we're going to qualify for Europe, we're going to have the same problems next year as we had this year. And therefore, you've got to sort of consider, are we going to get every single player injured? I mean, what's he doing in training? Is he taking pot shots with a rifle during training? so the problems we were saying, but also I think that De Zerbi himself, and I think we forget this, even though he was at Shakhtar, De Zerbi himself is on a massive learning curve as well, because he's in, not because he's in the Europa League or he's playing in Europe, but because he's in the Premier League. And so he therefore has to prove this to himself. And I think there's no better place within the Premier League than Brighton and Hove Albion for Roberto De Zerbi to be.
And with no disrespect to Shakhtar, the eyes of the world are on him in the Premier League than they would be in the Ukrainian League.
We hadn't heard of him. So when he was at Shakhtar, and certainly not when he was at Sassuolo, and doing very well there.
We did our pod tonight as well. We recorded it and we were talking about this. And I really like the fact that Xabi Alonso has decided to stay at Bayer Leverkusen and to try and cement his legacy a bit more. Yeah, he's already a legend because Leverkusen have become Leverkusen for the first time. Mm. But also, he wants to be more, to have more of a solid history there, another year, maybe some more trophies. And it would be nice. Isn't it pleasant when managers do stay a bit longer? And people might have offered De Zerbi the job. He might have taken it regardless. But it was disappointing when Graham Potter left when he did, for all of us, really.
Yeah.
Would be nice if De Zerbi could stay a bit longer, maybe get us into Europe another time, preferably lead us into Europe the year after, or win us a major trophy, or both. If he could do any of that, fantastic.
Yeah.
But I think he's already a legend, of course, but that extra bit would be fantastic, wouldn't it?
But I think obviously De Zerbi would have witnessed this, but Graham Potter, without probably realising just what a basket case club it has now become, Potter is a cautionary tale to the likes of Roberto De Zerbi. In fact, probably to a lot of managers who are at middle to low Premier League clubs, who have designs on going to bigger clubs, there's a cautionary tale for you. Be careful what you wish for because ...
Yeah. I mean, the thing with the Leverkusen story is fantastic, though. And it's not quite a story on the Leicester scale. But I mean, apparently, Man City are after Harry Kane for next season. Cause that's the only way that it's going to stop them from winning the league.
Boom. And indeed, splat. Yeah. No, absolutely. But if we get back to De Zerbi, I mean, there is that element of that we're all concerned of it. And like I say, I think just... there are so many people. I'm relatively relaxed about what's going to happen with us next season. I mean, we've got the summer transfer window coming up, who knows what's going to happen. There's not going to be any nine-figure sales from the club. I mean, there just is no one who's going to attract that kind of figure. Hopefully,
well, there is. I mean, we're not going to have... there are going to be players that will be...
Nine figures.
...sought after. But this is the key thing, isn't it, Russ? It's for De Zerbi to stay, and I think he will stay, but for him to do so, the club don't actually have to sell this summer. And last summer, when you're losing McAllister, when you're losing Caicedo, which is the two best central midfield partner, the best central midfield partnership in the league, possibly Europe, possibly the world last season, that's always going to leave a massive hole in your side. And I know we are only expecting to sell one of them, and it was Chelsea coming in was stupid, and Liverpool, to be fair. But I mean, he, obviously, Moyes made the wrong choice. But we don't actually have to sell. Now, we've got players that will attract attention, will attract big transfer fees. You're looking at Mitoma, who's going to be people interested in. Ferguson, who people are interested in. Pedro's had a fantastic first season at this level, and he's gone off and represented his country. So there are players within the team that are going to attract attention. But I don't think we're going to lose any of those in the summer. It's who we add to it.
Yeah, it's an interesting season, isn't it? Because I don't think enough acknowledgement has been made of that midfield partnership being lost. Mm. People have talked about Caicedo a lot, but A, because he's not done well at Chelsea, and B, because people haven't talked about McAllister, that vortex, that void being drawn out of our midfield and having to fill that. And Baleba was put in a year ahead of plan to try and fill that void, wasn't he? This is the problem. Yes, and that fits in with the whole De Zerbi style. So we've had to cope with that. We haven't had the media coverage to acknowledge that really at all, especially with Caicedo doing so badly. But I wonder if with the huge profits, what is it, 123, 124 mil, I wonder what effect that might have. On the one hand, people will see that we don't need to sell, and they might be a bit more standoffish. The whole, the profit and sustainability rules as well. Maybe there won't be so much going on in terms of sales that way. But also, I wonder if clubs will see how well we're doing, and will wonder if we will, can come in with some more, with another season where we can actually be at our best with the same squad and not be disrupted. I think certain players went off the boil, and it's just it's affected maybe the profiles of the likes of Ferguson. But I think if we can keep it together, and I think we've got the best chance we ever could have for that, we can go again with this squad plus a couple of additions, including Osman. I think we can go again.
The other thing is with this as well is there's going to be not necessarily a fire sale, but people are there are a lot of clubs that are going to need to sell players before the 30th of June. To fit in, otherwise they could be going down the same road as Forest, as Everton, and with these points deductions. Which, I mean, the way the whole thing's done, there should be a cut off on. If you're going to get points deducted, it should be we should know when it's going to happen before a ball is kicked. Frankly,
I mean that whole thing is just an absolute sort of basket of snakes that to try and unravel it is just, you just can't. I mean, all you ever want to see is consistency. I mean, the number of times people coming back and saying, well, hang on, Manchester City have been charged with 115 offences. Well, the reason they haven't been done for it is because they're still going through them. I mean, the others were about half a dozen offences. This is 115. So, you get a better idea as to how it is you're going there. Yeah. But, I mean, your point about would it be Mitoma, would it be Ferguson, would it be this, would it be that? I mean, the most likely in terms of the person who, ironically, isn't necessarily, I don't think, in line for player of the season. Pedro is the one that actually raises the headlines, and he's done very well. However, one, we've only just spent 30 million on him. Two, we've only got one season out of him. And the point is as you've pointed out there, Russ, £120 million profit is not going to be that much different for next season's figures. Everyone is going to see, they don't need to sell. If we do really want to prize one of their players, we're going to have to bid silly money, which incidentally, everyone has had to do previously. So, yeah, I mean, as much as we're a selling club, in as much as an asset will go maybe once, twice, one or two a season just to, to keep the sustainability going. And there might be one or two that go for 5 million here or six, whatever it might be. Some of the, even in all those figures, those massive ones of Caicedo and Sanchez and what have you, there were a couple of others that were sort of, a mere seven figures. So all these things keep the Albion ticking over. And as you also pointed out, AD, we are an attractive proposition, whether in Europe or not. Because if we're not in Europe next season, God damn it, we're a major possibility for Europe the following season. And therefore, you know, which players wouldn't want to necessarily be a part of that campaign?
Yeah, that's the thing. I think our profile's been raised, which is fantastic. And I do think the media can't stop waxing lyrical about us. It's gone off the boil a little bit recently for obvious reasons. But I do think the one unquantified factor is obviously that I alluded to the Caicedo thing. He's left a year earlier than we would have liked.
Yes.
If he'd left the end of this summer, everything was on track perfectly. Belaba would have gradually integrated. He would have come into his own early next season, probably, and that would have been great. If we get someone else in the same boat, if Joao or Ferguson, Mittema, whoever it is, suddenly decides, or Van Hecker or someone like that, suddenly decides they want to leave this summer and they're determined to do so, we don't stand in their way if it's going to be a problem. And that could upset the apple cart in the same way. That's the only worry I've got about this summer, if a player is determined to leave, because then...
All right, in that case, let's put it back on you. Who, from the lofty position of your seat, is the one that worries you, the ones that worry you the most? Who do you think has designs on... I mean, we're almost sort of like kind of insulting their integrity by saying so, but are there any that you have fears over that say they want to manipulate a transfer in the way that Trossard did?
I think because of the way the season's panned out, I don't think João Pedro, although I'm slightly worried about that, or Ferguson or Mittema are quite going to have the interest that they would have done because of injuries, form, the way that the season's panned out. The one I'm worried about is the one no one's mentioned, which is Jan-Paul van Hecker. He's an exceptional defender. He's getting better all the time. He's debatably could be our player of the season. And no one's really mentioned him, but he's stayed fit. So he stayed in the profile, in the public eye. I look at teams like Manchester United and I think they could do with someone like him. Even Van Heen, is it the guy at Tottenham? Rapid though he is and all the rest of it, he was exposed at the weekend.
I'm being too fast.
Yeah, two or three clubs, I think.
Remind me, this is JP's first full season in the first team, isn't it?
I think so, yeah.
For us, yes.
Right, yes. He was Blackburn and player of the season there. Absolutely. And I know that the Blackburn fans absolutely love him and can see big things for him. Personally, I can't see it on account of the fact that I think even he knows, and he is honest with himself, and you hear it in interviews, he knows he's still making too many mistakes. And given what De Zerbi expects of him, I think he would be honest enough to say, well, I could get a transfer one day, but really not yet. At the very least, we're going to get at least another year out of him, and I think possibly even two. I'm not worried in the way that you are, Russ.
I just think, Russ, as well, I mean, we've been quite famous for having succession planning. And I can't see who... I mean, we're going to have to get some more centre-back cover for next year, because it's like I think it's no secret that De Zerbi wanted to rotate a lot more this season. I mean, he's rotated more than any manager in history.
How much more could he rotate?
But he wanted... But yeah, but there are certain players like Pascal Gross, like Lewis Dunk, who've pretty much had to play every minute of every game. And I think we're seeing that Lewis is certainly looking tired. Pascal's looking really tired. It looked like they could... I mean, the fact that we're not playing this weekend has come at a really good time, because the players can hopefully put their feet up and actually get some R&R in, because it's like they need that break. They need to get some life back into those bodies, because if we got ambitions of pushing as hard as we can for the last few games of the season, and, you know, let's not forget, we could be going in... If we can actually pick up our form again, obviously, next game's Man City. That's going to be a tight game, but we've beaten them at home before. Let's not beat about the bush. We could upset the apple cart massively there. But if we can actually pick up points and a few more maximum points in the last few games, that last game at home to Man United, that could be a European shootout.
Yeah, and I really hope, even if it doesn't mean Europe, I really hope we can finish above United. We finished above Chelsea. That's given me great satisfaction last season. This year, finish above Man United, I'll be very happy with that. Two of the biggest clubs that I particularly don't like.
I think what Man U were one of the last. There's only about three or four clubs only in the country that we've never finished above. And I think it might be Liverpool, Man United and Arsenal. I think that's it. I could be wrong. Spurs we did, but that was back in 1901 or 1902, something like that. But apart from that, they're the only clubs left that we haven't finished above. So, yeah, interesting times. But, yeah, I mean, for as much as you're talking about how knackered they are in terms, you know, you're talking about Duncan Gross being as knackered as they are. Just imagine if we got past Roma, how what a mess they'd have been.
Well, Pedro would have been back.
Well, there's that, but I mean,
I'm sat there at the Olympic Stadium in Rome, and I'm seeing Danny Welbeck coming in positions where you'd see Pedro, and I know who I'd back to score more at this particular moment in time, and I'm thinking. Oh, there's a lot of onlys.
It cost us, didn't it? 100%. That cost us.
Well, I mean, that game. If you go into that game and you've got Matoma and you've got Pedro and you've even Hinshelwood, even if you've got Hinshelwood, I'm just so frustrated. I mean, at least we can say that we beat in Europe this season. We beat every single team we played.
Yes, and that's a hell of an achievement. Eight games, five wins, you know, sneeze on that, boys, because that was fantastic. So, you know, if we sort of like then just before we go on to shirt of the week, then Rush, just in summary, clearly you've had a lovely time in Europe. Yes, you want more, but how will you feel if we don't make it this season?
This season, I'd be fine with that, to be honest. I think cool. My bank account would be fine with it. Even in a footballing way, I'd be fine with it because I think it will come again. I do. I know we've all said, oh, we may never do this again. I think we will at some point. And I think it's not necessarily a bad thing to have 1 year on, 1 year off, maybe 1 year on again next time.
Because, I mean, if nothing else, we've actually beaten that kind of cautionary tale. Even West Ham, when they won, they've got into Europe in the last two or three seasons, but the first season they did, their Premier League form really, really suffered. And yet,
danger of relegation, yeah.
Yeah, and yet, amazingly enough, I won't say ours suffered, it wasn't as good. And I think that it's unfair that actually people are comparing this season with that last season. It's fair enough that you do so, but you said the season is in danger of petering out. We're on course for either our second or third best season ever.
Yeah.
You know, and you've got to look at everything in context here. And we can't go forever on a banging on about old Hereford and 25 years ago and being made homeless, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, they are still appropriate yardsticks. But let's look at the here and now. Even since we've been at the Amex for, the last 13 years, we are having our best three seasons ever.
Yeah, and we're doing no reason. Burnley and West Ham did in the season.
Absolutely. And there's no reason why next season shouldn't actually be one of the four best seasons ever. Mm. You know, and if it happens to be the best, better still. But there's no reason why we can't retain. Well, there's several reasons why we can't retain it. But if we're on the trajectory we're on, we have every means to be able to reach the goals and the plateau that we're at the moment.
Join us for Reverbicon 2024.
Help keep us independent and ferg-free.
We're live at Brighton Open Market on Saturday, the 27th of April.
And the Hope and Ruin in Queen's Road on Sunday, 28th of April.
Come and join us.
Come and join us. On air on 97.2 FM on DAB+ or at RadioReverb.com.
You can make a donation.
You can make a donation.
Or sponsor a show.
To find out more, go to RadioReverb.com. Join us for Reverbathon 2024.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Radio Reverb.
We are Brighton.
We are Brighton.
We are Brighton.
Okay, well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As ever, we're brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com, and Phil has given us a lovely vintage jersey for us to have a look at, Russ. And can you want to have a quick nosy at this and describe it for me?
Yeah, interesting. It's got like a bit of a Tottenham 1990s vibe to it. It's kind of like a pasty white with a navy or black collar, a V-shape. It's got a badge in a shield shape with PP written on it and some kind of bird flying, I think. Not sure what that is. It also says FNCFC, which doesn't give me any further clues, I've got to say. I think last time I was on here, I got it spot on. I'm not going to get it spot on. I've got absolutely no idea. Unless you give me a clue.
I've got this as a pastiche. It's not, but it's a pastiche of a Preston North End shirt.
Yeah.
As it's white and it's got either black or dark blue collars, you know, an open V. FNCFC, I suspect that stands for Fish and Chips FC. It's Pontins written across the middle. Apart from that, I can't help feeling this might be some kind of, you know, where the Albion put out, what do you call it, sort of speculative shirts, and that they'll do a kind of a, right, who likes this one? You know, these are the things that Phil gets hold of. I can't help feeling that someone like Derby or Preston have just done that, but with a spurious badge. Apart from that, I'm probably miles away from that.
I think the key thing on this shirt that gives it away, yeah, is the Preston North End badge on it.
Well, it would be, but the Preston North End badge has a lamb rather than a bird.
Oh, yeah. I know. Pontins, where was that based? Was that Sussex, I guess. My dad, fascinating fact, went out, I think, with the daughter of the guy that founded Pontins or something like that. Yeah.
I think Pontins. I don't know. Well, I know that there's a Pontins in Hailing Island because my aunt and uncle go there all the time. But yes. Anyway, we digress. This is your shirt of the week, and it is a 1984 to 1985 home shirt of Preston North End, displaying their first ever shirt sponsor in Pontins. Preston currently sit 10th in the Championship with a very outside chance of getting into the playoffs. Home is the historic Deepdale, which is widely regarded as the oldest continuously used football stadium in the world. Preston played their first ever match there in October 1878. Incidentally, Deepdale was used for rugby and cricket before the soccer team first played there. And starting in 1890, the ground was also used for professional baseball. Preston tend to go by the acronym of P&E, but they do have a couple of other nicknames, one being the Lily Whites and also the Invincibles after their 1888 to 1889 season when they went unbeaten in all competitions, which meant they won the inaugural Football League and they also won the FA Cup. Does anyone know what the PP stands for on the badge?
I did, but I can't remember.
It stands for Prince of Passy, which translates to be Prince of Peace, which is another title for Christ invoking him as protector of the city, apparently. Until 1961, Preston were mostly a Division One side, but since relegation at the end of that season, they've yo-yoed around some Football League divisions and not really look like regaining their top flight status since. Obviously, former notable players at Preston include Tom Finney. He played nearly 500 times for P&E, scoring 210 times. And he also played for England 76 times, scoring 30 goals. A couple more historical players who've worn the Lily White shirt. Bill Shankly played more than 300 times between 33 and 49. Howard Kendall began his playing career playing for Preston between 63 and 67. Some slightly more up-to-date notables include Sam Allardyce, who was there 85 to 86. Kevin Kilbane began his career there in 95. And David Nugent, who bookended his career at Preston. His first team.
Was he Avid as well?
He's related to Avid Merrion. That's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, nice typo there, Phil. I tell you, I'm
What are you?
I'm Ron Burgundy. I just read what's on the script. It's like,
yeah.
Hi, San Diego. Anyway, Avid Nugent, who bookended his career at Preston, his first stint was between 2005 and 2007, and he finished his career there in 2019-20. Links to the Albion. Well, most obvious to those is of a certain age is Mark Lawrenson. Mark began his career at Preston in 1974. In 77, he signed for Brighton and played 152 times for us before leaving for Liverpool in 1981. Nobby Lawton was at Preston between 63 and 67. He turned out for Brighton 112 times between 67 and 71. Alex Dawson must have been following Nobby around. He was at Preston between 61 and 67. And he joined the Albion in 1968, playing 57 times and scoring 26 goals between 68 and 71. So thanks for that, Phil. Of course, you can see this and over 130,000 other shirts over at oldfootballshirts.com.
How could he miss? If he's going to mention Mark Lawrenson, how could he also therefore miss Gary Williams?
Kurt Nogan.
And well. Kurt Nogan.
Didn't Robbo play at Preston, or do you say that one?
Robbo did start his career at Preston.
I thought so. Really? The only reason is Loro told me that.
Exactly, sure.
They followed each other around. You said about the other two, but I think Loro and Robbo followed each other around, didn't they? Because they were at Lancashire Cricket Club, Preston, and then obviously both at the Albion and then Liverpool.
I've always had a lovely time every time I go to Preston, though. I mean, it's just one of those places. I mean, Russ, that when you just come out of the station, the first thing you see is that imposing mill overlooking overlooking the town. But every time I go there, the people have just got this immense sense of pride of place about the town, about the football club. And it's always been such a wonderful place to go.
Yeah, it's a famous club. It's sort of medium-sized, isn't it? Whatever that means. But it's still big, but not that big. It always feels like they get decent crowds. They always seem to be in the Championship.
Sleeping giant, I would say.
They are. They are kind of sleeping giants. I mean, they're not the same size as the big boys, but they've got an incredibly rich history. Some fantastic players have played there. As you said, it's got that sense of history, the town itself. And on top of all that, they had the Black Cat game, the one where we lost 3-0 on an evening match, which I was at, where the Black Cat invaded the pitch.
Well, I mean, we should talk about their neighbours, I suppose, which is relegation-threatened Burnley. Well, this game is pretty awful. There's not really much we can say about it, really. There is.
The two worst goals of the... If Match of the Day do the worst goals of the season, then these two will absolutely smash it. I thought that Burnley's goal was a bit of a howler. It was with Dean-esque. You know, it was unfortunate. Belaba... You know, let's point fingers here unnecessarily. Belaba's back pass was under hit. I mean, the commentators were blaming Verbruggen. I mean, he was left in no man's land. He did get to the ball first. He was just unfortunate in as much as it ricocheted in the way that absolutely every forward really wanted to. Because if it hits if it's the boots on the other foot and it hits a Brighton player, it goes over the bar.
Or wide. Yeah. Or for a throw in.
Yeah, I mean, for two Premier League sides, they're both horrific goals. But Russ, I'm going to allow you the privilege. Tell us about our absolute screamer for an equaliser.
Oh, it was a stunner, wasn't it? People talk about Enciso's goals against Chelsea and Man City, but this was the one, wasn't it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
they always say when you're passing back to the goalkeeper, if you don't pass it between the posts, it can't go in. And that is true. But I've got to say the blame really here lies with the goalkeeper. It wasn't an overhit shot, an overhit pass. And it he just seemed to, without seeming to take his eye off the ball, he clearly did take his eye off the ball. And it just wasn't quite where he thought it was. It went slightly to the right of where he thought from his view. And even then, it was in slow motion, and somehow you think, well, that's not going to go in anyway. It's a cock-up, but it's not going in. And it did. It managed to go over the line.
I mean, the classic example of this goal is Peter Enkelman, who was in goal for Burnley, wasn't he? I mean, I did go down a rabbit hole of watching comedy own goals after this. And
just to make you feel better.
This move is quite common. There was quite a lot on this blooper reel I saw. I mean, there was one classic one where the keeper did stop it, and he went to clear it, but he knocked it with the other foot in the goal.
And there's one or two that you see on these show reels, you think, that's bent, you know, sort of like the player's knocked it back and the keeper's just sort of fallen over, you know, a bit of a pratfall. And you think, yeah, I wonder how much you've got on this game, mate.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I mean, there's been some absolute classic own goals over the years, though, Russ. I mean, pick your favourite.
Well, I actually really like one from this weekend, the Man City Luton game. Cowdy scored with his face. Now the Luton Japanese fullback has done the same. He got one right in the kisser, Diverted it beautifully in the top corner. That wasn't bad. Although, to be fair to him, that wasn't his fault at all, was it, really? Dare I say, Mr. Adam Hinshelwood, who we all love, of course, former player of ours, has gone on to be a good manager so far. He scored a bit of a classic. I can't remember who it was against. We had him on the pod and he wasn't too happy to talk about it.
Well, likewise, actually, because when we had him on this show, I had to go to Worthing to interview him in probably the biggest echo chamber that Worthing could actually muster. And I showed the footage to sort of various people while I was waiting for Adam. Who's that? Who did that then? That was your manager. Really? Yeah. And I did get. I'm sure you did. You got chapter and verse as to how that came about.
I know it was New Year's Day.
Yeah, and I want to.
I think it might have been Gillingham.
I want to say Watford, but Watford was the halfway line one, wasn't it, Chris Eagles? But do you know what? In the great scheme of things, I don't think it matters. All he said was that the goalkeeper. I mean, this is picking up from what you just said, Russ. The goalkeeper had been told to move to the side. John Sullivan told to move to the side. So if the ball does come back, then and he misses it, it's going to go for a corner. The only thing apparently, and this is Hinshelwood's defence, is the defenders hadn't been told that. And you think, yeah, okay, well, if this goes to trial, I'll demand separate lawyers.
I'm sure I saw one this season where someone chipped the ball from the halfway line over the goalkeeper's head. I can't remember who it was, though, so I can't give credit for that one.
Well, let's go historical then and say Lee Dixon's one.
Oh, that was good.
That was good. I mean, obviously, the all-time classic, of course, is Colin Hawkins and his diving header.
That was a bullet.
Against Hartlepool, and I think that was Russell Slade's last game, wasn't it? No.
Didn't Terry Connor score a diving-headed own goal against Norwich in a 3-0 defeat?
I'll have to take your word for that one.
I think TV, thankfully, as well.
Diving-headers are a dying art, aren't they? And to have something like that, what a shame it was in the opposite end. I mean, to be fair, Burnley had a good chance with a diving header, and as much as I'd have hated for it to go in, you just think, well, I haven't seen one of those for a bit.
The Joas, that's one I can remember for us.
And of course, there was a classic game at Anfield where we lost. I believe we scored. I think it was
we scored six, four of the.
We scored four of the six goals for them.
Seven goals, but 4-3 win for us.
It was. We scored one, and we also scored three of theirs.
Who scored our one?
Kazenga.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. And for those who do remember, and we're heading back to the Goldstone in a minute, but for those who do remember, we're talking about 1989, 1990, maybe a little later. We're talking Brighton against Leeds. I think Gordon Strachan he's got past his man. He's slightly wide of the goal. He knocks it square, but the pass is so poor. Everyone goes, phew. And it bobbles up and hits Ian Chapman on the knee and just slowly trickles into the North Stand goal. It's the slowest goal, apart from that one that Pascal Gross scored for Brighton at West Ham. It's probably the slowest goal I've ever seen.
Okay, but before we head back to the Goldstone, Al, next Saturday, the 27th of April, myself and Al will be back in the studio for the first time since lockdown. This show's mostly recorded on Zoom these days. So we're excited to get back there. But why are we going, Al?
Because it's the Reverbathon, Radio Reverb, this wonderful community asset. It's a community interest radio company, I think it's called. It requires funding in order to exist. It has things to pay for, like licenses and rent and rates. And Russ, if you ever wanted to know why or how it is we can play whatever music we want at the end of the show, it's because we have to pay our licenses. At the end of the podcast, just don't tell anyone.
I have to sing myself if I wanted to have any music on the outro.
Yes. I digress. The station survives on funding through donations, sponsorship and grants. So that famous D word there, donation, is the Reverbathon. We're looking to raise funds for the radio station throughout the weekend. We have a live slot instead of our usual midday Saturday slot. We're 5 o'clock, which given how 5:30 kickoffs normally go, means that we'll be nine sheets to the wind. We'll be no such thing. We'll be professionals on air like we always are.
We're bringing a Vidi printer. That's what we're doing.
That's what you really want, a Vidi printer, or you want that?
I do want a Vidi printer.
You want that?
Or my phone will do, or the internet. That might work.
Yeah, you want the fight in the background, don't you?
I just want the clack. The clack of the Vidi printer.
Okay, well, I'll bring some castanets in then. Anyway.
Olé.
So if you wish to help keep this wonderful community program going, do go to radioreverb.com/donate. Chuck in a few quid from your, because it's the end of the month, you've just been paid, so please give us all your paycheck. That'll be fantastic. And if you're interested in being a co-sponsor of the show, we already have the wonderful Ridgeview Wine Estate and Flowers Unlimited. Thank you, Dave. Thank you, Tam, as being our sponsors for that particular show. But if you also want us to shout out how wonderful you are, you're going to have to cross our palms with paper, preferably one with Queen's head on. So if you wish to co-sponsor the show, then please get in touch. Email us at thealbionraw@yahoo.co.uk. So we look forward to presenting our show live from the open market on the 27th of April.
Yeah, come along and heckle. Boo. Wave at the window.
No, please don't. Please don't. And, just go to the bar that's in the corner there and flick V's at us by all means, but don't heckle.
Now, unfortunately, Al, this week we have lost a bit of an Albion legend. We're going to talk to one of his best friends over the next couple of weeks, I believe. But
Nigel Erskine, an Albion hero. Now, I think it's only people of a certain vintage, especially those who actually did go to the Goldstone, will remember him. Let's say he's a kind of a diminutive figure physically, but in terms of stature for Albion support, he was as big as they got. A hilarious character, apparently, according to others, never got the round in, but part of the Goals Eye team. Many stories are coming out. I'm just reading about, if you want to hear the stories, then go to his funeral, but I think that they'll all come out in the media anyway. To give you an example as to how naughty he could be, I'm going to read this. It's from North Stand Chat. I'm reading this verbatim. It's a poster called Questions. He says, I think it was Shrewsbury away, maybe on a Worthing coach, when Nigel was starkers and we turned the flames up on our lighters and set fire to his genitalia. He spent the whole game watching the match wearing only a surgical mask around that area, nursing burnt testicles. His underpants got thrown out the skylight of the coach and landed on the windscreen of our police escort. They turned them on to get rid, but they got caught and wouldn't come off. I was crying and laughing all the time. You can't forget that, but why would you ever want to? And that apparently was where he got his nickname of Bushfire. And as for those who, there was also a time when Goalseye, and we're talking probably early 90s here, Goalseye, which was the fanzine. Now, obviously these days it's podcast. Goalseye was the fanzine. It was run by Ian Hart and Peter Kennard. Erskine was very much a part of that. And Goalseye at one point did actually sponsor an Albion game. I think a couple of days beforehand, this is a story we were told earlier today, AD. A couple of days before the game, Derek Allen, the club secretary, phones up Ian Hart saying, by the way, what's this? I'm not going to do the Northern accent. What's this I hear about your friend Nigel being the mascot? He's not of school age anymore. And so Harty went, well, if he's not going to be the mascot, we're not going to have him. You know, you can stuff your sponsorship. So anyway, cut a long story short, they did sponsor the game. Nigel comes running out, holding Steve Foster's hand. And apparently at the time, substitute Junior McDoodle, who was a decent centre forward for us back in the early 90s.
But he was going through a bit of a barren spell.
He was going through a barren spell. So Nigel went onto the pitch, belted the ball into the North Stand goal, went up to Junior and went, that's how you bleep do it, son. And then also then took a penalty and took a running jump or running dive, Klinsmann type, on the Goldstone turf, which in those days wasn't really watered, certainly not in the way that the Amex pitch is. The whole lot came down, shorts and undercrackers as well, right in front of the North Stand.
If he had found some new undercrackers by this point, I should point out.
Yes. So, but I mean, it makes him sound as though he was an outrageous person, which I think by the sound of things he was, but he was bright through and through. We knew he'd been ill for a long time, but the amount of love and respect and fond memories that we've been reading across social media today have kind of underlined what a lovely, friendly, enthusiastic character and his disdain for Stanley Archer and Bellotti are there and legendary. He is a Brighton hero, a Brighton legend, and probably especially to those who knew him way, way better than we did. We send our sincerest condolences to the loss of a lovely, lovely bloke.
An Albion hero in every meaning of the word. Now, Russell, unfortunately for us, you do another podcast. I mean, I don't know where you got that idea from. Perhaps it was when you were a guest with us many, many moons ago. But you've been doing it a little while now. Talk to us about the Brighton Rock Pod.
Yeah, well, I've always kind of fancied the notion of it. I think you guys did actually play a part in it. I think I was a guest on your show back in the day a couple of times, and I thought
back in the day, we're still going.
It was still back in the day.
In the other day, you know, the one before this.
Oh, that one's
Yeah, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was good. I felt a bit raw on it. I wasn't quite sure I was the part at the time. But I remember I had a voicemail from my dad. It was quite a nice, it's just an ordinary sort of message, but it's quite a nice little message. And I thought it's quite nice to get that, you know, just recorded and kept. You know, he won't be around forever. And I thought the same goes with everyone. We just talked about Nigel Erskine. I don't know him personally, but you know, everyone's got friends, family that you might want to keep. My idea with the podcast was, I started in January 2020, was to have pretty much to have as many Albion voices on the air as possible, just for posterity. That's part of what I wanted to do. There's also the fact that I'm an incessant chatter and can't stop talking about football. And I thought the combination of those two things would work as criteria to start a podcast. And as you know, my co-host Peter, who you both are familiar with as well, is very similar to me in that regard. So we thought we can just natter for England about the Albion, about football in general. And you guys do a studio-based thing. We thought, well, that's great and that's brilliant. We don't want to do that because that's just getting under your skin and whatever else. And, you know, we might just be dirt on the shoe and all that. But we wanted to do something different. So we thought, well, we'd do more like the pub vibe. So we record podcasts down the pub. We do them on Zoom as well, but we do them on match days. And we just get as many voices on, as many opinions, make it funny, because we don't have to broadcast through your channels. We can swear, which we tend to do. I've tried to curb the C word because I think that's a bit too much, but we have broken the seal on that regard as well. But
I should point out, Russ, that Raw regular Andy Bass is features on your show. In fact, I believe he's on this week.
I've never heard him swear.
No. Having sat next to him at the football for
he doesn't swear.
No. 20 years is like, Andy definitely does not swear. No, definitely
he's
not.
He's a lovely lad, and there's enough Andy Bass to go around, is my theory on that one. So yes, we've been going about 4.25 years. We've had loads of guests on. We've had some of the people you know as well, Loro. We've had Tim Vickery on, and various other players, and the Anfield Rap guys. And so it's a mixture of, for us, it's more like pub chat, stadium atmosphere type stuff. That's the main vibe. But we do Zoom stuff as well, and we've had various guests on. A lot of it is crossover stuff with you guys, of course. But I found there was room for another one at the time. Of course, we've now got about 7 more, haven't we? So it's expanding beyond all control. But we were talking about
some people call it a podcast, others just call it therapy.
Therapy, exactly. That's what all it is, isn't it? And it's venting, and it's chatting, and it's digressing and divulging and analyzing. It's whatever you want it to be. Andy, you mentioned Andy. He said to me he loves all the Albion podcasts because he thinks every one of them provides something different. Mm. I do like the fact there's quite a few, because it makes us feel like a bigger club, doesn't it? It feels like the time for that.
Who is going to, in that case, who would you like to nominate to start the Brighton equivalent of Arsenal Fans TV?
That might be me. Sounds like the sort of thing, doesn't it? Yeah, I don't know. I think that's for someone else. One of the youth, maybe.
The weird thing is that with that, I mean, if we're taking in the kind of the umbrella of podcasts across, well, like say every club will have one. And it's bizarre that Arsenal, is it indicative of the self-entitlement of certain clubs? They'll have that ranting TV. I think West Ham have got something not dissimilar. Whereas I think that just about every Brighton fan that I could think of would be embarrassed to have a show like that.
Yes, everyone laughs at Arsenal TV, don't they? And Arsenal fans, I know loads of them because I'm in North London, cringe at Arsenal TV.
Oh, really? It's not just that one, though, is it? I mean, Man United's got all these different channels as well, and it's equally as cringeworthy. I mean, you know, you get the ones where they're all watching the match on TV. I mean, I got asked to do something like that years ago, and I said, no, I'm not, I can't. A, I can't do it. I'm at the game.
Well,
B, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, I think, I mean, podcasting has taken off exponentially, hasn't it, over the last few years? I mean, absolutely enormous. I mean, there must be hundreds of thousands of them, just UK-based alone. There's so many. Every footballer, every football manager, every pundit, every journalist, every musicians, TV celebrities, everybody seems to have a podcast. And, you know, in the greater scheme of things, we're probably smaller down the scale. Certainly I am, compared with you guys, a long-established...
Oh, shucks, that's the nicest thing you've ever said.
Yeah, gents, but no, we all got our part, I think. As long as people... I always said to people, I'll quite happily just do the podcast with Peter and have absolutely nobody listen, because we enjoy the process.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's nice if people listen as well, and we get a few listeners, you know. But I think different voices, everyone's got something to say, I think, when it comes to football. You've been in pubs pre-match, post-match. Everyone chats, don't they? The fact you're wearing a top, someone comes up to you, a total stranger, and they'll have a chat with you. So I think
that was the thing about being in Rome, Russ, though, wasn't it? I mean, actually, probably not quite as much in Amsterdam, actually. But I know Athens was similar to Rome, but because everyone was in such a small area of the city, I suppose, and it's actually the centre of Rome is actually more condensed. That's probably the way of looking at it.
Right.
And it was like, you know, every time you turn the corner, oh, hi, Marcus. It was amazing.
Amsterdam was like that for me as well, actually. It just seemed that there are Brighton fans in every bar in central Amsterdam, and it was fantastic. It was all nice. Good
weren't
nature.
They singing across the canal to each other?
Yeah.
No, I missed that bit, but yeah, apparently so. Yeah.
Well, the other thing with Rome was there's quite a few Irish bars, and one player that would be very popular in there at the moment is Marco Marni.
Well, we've got a dry week, so Marco Marni is going to be a name we'll talk about later, I reckon. Anyway.
Yeah, I think so. We'll do it later. Okay, well, that is all we've got time for. So thank you so much to Russell Guyver from the Brighton Rock Pod. Thank you to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. And don't forget the Reverbathon coming up on next Saturday, 27th of April. Please donate. Please sponsor us. You know where to get a hold of us. But you've been listening to the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, of course on a podcast, and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Twice.